you heard Anil talk about literacy before, and literacy comes in many shapes. Obviously, the foundation of literacy is Braille, and we have a very deep commitment, like Anil said earlier, to Braille education and the use of Braille. But the modern age has led us to other kinds of access to literature. And I'm just reading a note here on the podium. So before I forget, I need to remind folks who are on the internet out there, you can call us on the phone or text 212-255-6688 with your reactions to anything we're doing. That's 212-255-6688. Or email us at convention@nfbny.org. I'm glad Mike taped this card to the podium, so I can't put my hand in the podium without being reminded to say that. By the way, for those of you who don't know, you put your hand on the podium, you can read and still talk to you all at the same time. But our commitment to literacy has evolved. Literacy now comes through the internet. It comes on electronic note takers. It has come for quite a number of years through recorded means. Since the Library of Congress began the Talking Book program, many of us grew up with talking books and Braille. Some people grew up with only talking books and couldn't spell superfluous as a result. And so as a result, you know, we have people who can't do it. But all these things have been available, and all of these things are the ways of gathering information. There are some people who couldn't gather their information through the use of Braille because they were never taught Braille. So their way of gathering information about the world around them was through the radio. I know some people have done that very successfully. We'll talk about that later. Having said that, there are different approaches, different reasons to read, different reasons to gain access to information, and they're educational, they're spiritual, and they're leisure. We have people here in this room today who can address the needs for educational, spiritual, and leisure reading. And let me give you, for the first aspect of educational reading, a young lady who you know already, Chancy Fleet.
We got long stories,
short stories,
art stories,
sports stories,
books about the wild, wild west.
Yeehaw!
We got fairy tales,
scary tales.
We've even got some hairy tales.
It's hard to choose which ones are our best.
So hard!
We got...
Okay. All right. Hi, how is everyone?
Cool.
Can everybody hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, wonderful. So I'm going to talk today about information literacy. I'm going to be moving pretty fast through quite a bit of information, but I don't want anyone to panic. My fiance Oscar is going to be around at the end, and if you raise your hand, he'll come and address or phone number, and we have a little CD that we can send you, or if you don't have a computer, we can just talk to you, and we have enough people that need to talk. We'll do a conference call, because there's a lot of kind of hard facts in this talk. For 12 minutes, yeah. So my name's Chancy Fleet. I teach adaptive technology at the Jewish Guild for the Blind, and I am in grad school at the JFK Junior Institute for Professional Education, doing an MA in Disability Studies. And literacy is kind of my passion. Why should we care about digital literacy? My answer to that is this. People think Braille is dying out. Braille is not dying out. Braille is coming alive in a new form. For the longest time, if you wanted a book in print, you had to have a professional transcribe it for you. Now you can put text on a scanner or get it from the publisher. And if you convert it to, if you send it to a Braille display, you can have it portably. Your pocket dictionary no longer takes up 8 volumes on a bookshelf. It's searchable. And it's all the benefits of Braille, basically, with none of the weight of Braille. That's only become available in the last probably couple of decades. So through digital literacy, through the conversion of inaccessible print to accessible formats, particularly Braille, I think that's going to be the thing that saves Braille from dying, if we pay attention to that potentiality. And if we talk up that potentiality every time we hear that Braille is dying out. So that's why I care about digital literacy. Well, what does digital literacy actually mean? It doesn't just mean reading. Maybe if you're watching Reading Rainbow, it just means reading, but that's about the last time it means that. Society wants things back from you when you read things. We read to understand. We read to synthesize and grow our knowledge and make connections. And we read to produce. And I'll talk more about that in a minute. So when we consider the method that we're going to use to read, we've got to keep those goals in mind. We don't just read and then forget. If you can't read print well, there are several roads you can go down. You can use magnification, either large print on a paper, or you can use a computer that has screen magnification and maybe highlights the words as you move. You can use human recorded audio. You can use synthetic speech that comes from your computer and is produced by a computer program, the robot voice. And you can use Braille, hard copy Braille or refreshable Braille. And all of those methods have their strengths and their weaknesses. And there are a couple things that I think that you should consider when you're choosing your reading method to do a particular task or choosing the reading method that you want to pursue and strengthen and grow. One of them is the need for speed. The average sighted person reads 350 words a minute, do you? If not, it's hard to compete. So you got to figure out whether you're going to train your ears to listen to speech that fast, whether you're going to train your fingers to walk that fast, or whether you're okay doing that with magnification, which very few low vision people are. Will you meet 300 words a minute? Maybe not, and there are other ways to be competitive, but it is a number, it's out there, it's real, and it needs attending to. Then I want to talk about the need for precision. When you have a book that's recorded by a person, and they say a word like what Carl said earlier, superfluous. I can spell it, but I can't say it.
Neil can say it.
What if that's word, what if you're looking at that word for the first time? If you're listening to a person talking, you can't go to the studio and tap that guy on the shoulder and say, "Hi, hey guy, can you spell that for me?" Sometimes if there are things that are highlighted because they're extra important, or if there are tables that have numerical data, it's really hard to deal with that when you have human audio. So the need for precision is another thing you got to consider when you're choosing your reading method. And finally, I had to think about what to call this, but the need for fluidity. Can you jump from chapter 1 to chapter 5? Can you skip one of those little inset boxes that says, did you know, and you want to say back, I did know, and I don't care? Can you turn to page 37 if you're reading in a class or in a church? That's fluidity, and you want to make sure that the reading method that you choose makes you fluid enough to use a book the way that it's meant to be used, which is basically any way that you want to use it. Now, let me talk about providers. I'm moving right ahead. There are several providers in this country for accessible textbooks, and I'm going to briefly tell you what they are, what they offer, and how you go join. But first, a word about your rights. State law mandates that any publisher wishing to do business with K-12 education or with colleges make their files available to a qualifying person with a disability in an accessible format. You may write them on your own with the appropriate documentation. You may get assistance from the Disability Service Office at your school, or you may contact the NFB and someone will help you. You have that right. There is no need for you to scan a 400-page book. If you plan ahead, get your book list well ahead of time, and put that in motion, you have that entitlement. Moving on to the providers. The first one I want to talk about is bookshare.org, all one word, no dashes. These books are available in what's called DAISY. And when you have a DAISY file, you can magnify it and have it highlighted. You can have it read with synthetic speech. You can send it to refreshable Braille, or you can Braille it out or print it out. Bookshare runs on the iPhone, it runs on the Mac, and it runs on the PC. So whatever you, and a lot of note takers, whatever you have, it'll work out. The precision is very good for the most part, not with every book, but most books are marked up by page, by chapter, by section, and even the tables are described. And for the most part, the fluidity is very good. The precision is good because it's a DAISY file. It's kind of like a web page, an HTML file, so you can spell things out. It's free for students, and it's $50 a year for unlimited books, any of the 72,000 that they currently have, as many as you need, $50 a year if you are not a student. You can go to bookshare.org and join. If you need help through the process, let someone in the organization know. Moving on to Learning Ally, and I'm going to try to stay apolitical and not comment on why they changed their name from Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic. I'll just leave it at, I don't like focus groups very much right now. What's the opposite of focus? Myopia, I think it is.
Myopic group.
I'll spell it later. Learning Ally, they are human recorded books, recorded by volunteers, not recorded by professionals in the studio. So one thing about them is that you have a different reader for different chapters, different sections, and the quality does vary. But the good thing is there are a lot of textbooks available. You can play them on Mac, PC, or a bunch of different handheld devices and note takers. I believe individual membership is something around $80 or $90 a year, whether you're a student or not. Now, the fluidity is good. You can go from chapter to chapter and page to page because the books now are digital and you can move around them with any of those devices that I just mentioned. Precision, not so much. You can't spell things out unless they think to spell a particular word that they feel might be difficult for you. So keep that in mind. Moving on to iBooks, which is one of the first mainstream solutions for anyone, blind or sighted. It runs on all Apple products, iPhone, iPod Touch, iMac, I can't think of the other ones. Claudius, he says. The precision is good. You can spell things out. You can tell about formatting. And the fluidity is good. You can move from chapter to chapter, page to page. For these books, you need an Apple ID and password, and you pay per the book. There is in the public domain, if it's older than, I think, 1920-something, it's free. There are two more solutions that I'm not going to go into in depth because they're new, I don't know them well, and they are only partially, there are some accessibility issues with Kindle for PC and Blio. So if you're interested in those specific things, just ask me later. I can't go there right now. And the next way that you can do it is you can scan your own. You can go to your public library or your school and see if they have a scanning and reading system there where you can purchase your own. There are quite a few. And if you go to the International Braille and Technology Center that the NFB hosts, you can get a list of what all those are. Okay? One last thing before I move on. If you're scanning your own information, just know whether you need metadata. Know whether when you scan something in, you need to know what's italicized, what's centered, what's formatted, how. And if that's important to you, make sure that the product that you choose has that feature. Not all of them do. And I'm running out of time fast, so I want to say a couple things about gathering information. I mentioned that information is not just about reading. We need to be aware that information is everywhere now. It's available on your smartphone, it's available on the internet, not just through books. And information is like a fire, and you need to be like a fireman. You need to be prepared at any time to respond to what's around you and get that information under your control. What I say to my clients is please never leave home without your note-taking method, because we don't just read books, we can take in information at any time in almost any place. The public libraries are a great resource. We all know that the public libraries have the NLS program for the blind and physically handicapped. I want to make you aware that there is a website now called infoeyes.org where you can actually schedule a phone appointment with a reference librarian, and they'll help you through the research process. And those public library databases, if you have a user number on your library card and log into the library databases, generally they're accessible. And there's lots of good academic and general interest information out there for you. Don't ignore the databases. They're there for you to use. I want to talk a tiny bit about note-taking. You want to have a note-taking method as you read that's legible to you, that doesn't distract you, doesn't die in the middle of your lectures, that's durable over time, and that's amenable to being backed up by you. Those are the things that you need in a note-taking device as you're reading to make sure that your reading pays off later. And my final thought is this. The last part of reading, at least academic reading, is producing. We don't just expect you to read in this society, we expect you to write and give something back and contribute. The Commission for the Blind and Physically Handicapped calls us consumers. And a lot of time that we act like that's what we are. We ask about technology that can bring us things and give us things, and we enroll in programs and we receive services. But it's when we become the producers that we fully exercise our citizenship. It's important that you have a way to do that. It's important that you have a way to use a computer independently. If you're not sure what your options are, come see me and we'll talk about it. Whether it's magnification or speech, there are free solutions out there. It's important that you know how to proofread, move text around from place to place, and format. Formatting is like the banquet dress that we're gonna have tonight. That's the banquet dress for your paper. You may not think it's very important, but people notice. And finally, I wanna say that writing and expressing yourself and producing after you read is one of the best opportunities that you have to overcome people's prejudices about you. Because once you get those words on a page and hand them over, your words don't have a disability. Remember that. Literacy is going to make us equal as we continue to move forward with new technologies and new ways to network and teach each other. But that equality is only going to be available to those of us who go out and get it. Thank you.
Good job.
I'm sorry, I'm running late.
Good job. No, good job. Isn't it great to know that that's a part of our future, folks? The young lady here. Now, shifting to a different generation. This ESL thing came to me, and people said, don't call it ESL. People are going to misunderstand what you're doing. I still like the phrase, educational, spiritual, and leisure reading. The spiritual aspect of reading is important as well. And I've got two people to present thoughts on spiritual access to spiritual reading materials and the importance of reading and the gains that one can get spiritually from reading as well. And whatever their thoughts are might be on that. And they're both known to you. I'm glad to have them both here. And let me give them to you in the order of Cantor Dr. Mindy Jacobson and Father John Sheehan, S.J. Cantor.
Bad books, good books, bad books.
They're all great in their way. But whichever one you choose, hey, you just can't lose. Come on and read a book today.
We've got books about space and a book about a race between a coyote and a hare.
We got skinny books.
Thank you. Friends, I'd like to just say a word about the JBI International. You might have known it years ago as the Jewish Braille Institute of America, but its name has changed. So JBI International, I was with them for years and years and years back in the 90s and got my books from them as a student and worked there as a clerk back in the 70s. So I've been familiar with the organization for a long time. And they are actually coming into the 21st century kicking and screaming. But they do have some books on the digital media that you can play in your Library of Congress digital players. JBI has books of Jewish interest in every category. So you wouldn't just see religious materials, you would also see materials that might be novels, plays, cookbooks. You know how it is. We have a lot of Jewish recipes, right? You got to be able to make a potato latke. You got to be able to make chopped liver, chicken fricassee, actually. So reservations, that's my deal. There are so many different genres available through the JBI. Some of it is available in digital media. The rest is available on cassette, but JBI is working very hard to get its library to be completely digital. Actually, Joyce Carrico is very much in charge of the Braille program at JBI. A lot of people think the Braille is dead at JBI. The books have been turned over to the Library of Congress, but people can still get things Brailled for them, and Joyce will proofread that stuff for you, and that is in Hebrew and English. So, and that would be textbooks or information that you just need from handouts, all kinds of things like that. All you need to do is call the JBI and ask for the library. So that is the information about JBI International. They are in New York City. For those who can take the number, it's 212-889-2525. And if you're not in New York City, you can dial 800-431-1531. All of a sudden, I saw it in front of me and didn't see it. 800-431-1531, and it's jbilibrary.org. That would be www.jbilibrary, all one word, .org. Thank you very much.
Before I say anything official, I just wanted to note that when Chauncey was speaking, did you notice in her whole talk there was not one not one not one She spoke with authority, and it came through. Brava. I was very impressed. Hey. I'm particularly honored to be asked to speak to this group this year in this city. As you know, I am a Jesuit priest, and we try to follow the example of Jesus. Jesuits go to where the sinners are. And so I find it especially appropriate to come here to Albany. Not that there are any sinners here at the Best Western, of course, but down the block. Carl said that I might want to talk about the Xavier Society for the Blind. And the theme of this section was going to be education, spirituality, and leisure. I guess I'm supposed to do part of spirituality. I can do that. In fact, I often do that. We've been around since 1900, and the Xavier Society does good work. Well, actually, my trained and dedicated staff do the good work, and they make me look good, but they do great work. We are continuing to expand both what we do and how we do it, making our material available to more people in more ways. We do not charge for our works. You don't have to be Catholic or even a Christian to be a member and receive our materials. We focus on spiritual and religious, but we have in our library works by Protestant authors, Jewish authors, and a lot of books. I don't know what religion the author is, even after I've read the book. One of the great authorities today on Islam is a Jesuit priest, so go figure, right? Xavier Society is a strong and a consistent advocate of Braille. We do large... I talk about Braille a half a dozen times a week. We do large print. We have finally phased out our cassettes, and everything audio is on CDs, either on CDs or direct download from our website, and we are starting to do direct download for Braille materials as well. We are getting into the 21st. But, apologies, Mr. President, I am not going to talk about the Xavier Society for the Blind, at least not in the way Carl was thinking of, because I suspect most of you know about it. And if you don't, on the table outside, I have Braille brochures, and I have large print brochures and CDs, and there are mass proppers for the mass tomorrow if you didn't bring your own. And I've been asked to remind you that also on the table outside, there's lots of material from the NFB, and it's free, and please take some, because they really do not want to have to schlep it home when they go. If you try to find me, I'm available to talk about the Xavier Society or anything else. If I'm not immediately around this afternoon, you might check the bar. Well, I'm a graduate of the University of Notre Dame, and our football team is trying to come back from two consecutive losses. So one way or the other, I'll be drinking. What I did want to talk about is the Veterans Outreach Program that we are running for veterans and what that might have to do with you. As most of you know, I was at the Louisiana Center for the Blind in January for 2 weeks. There was a man in my class who was 59 years old. He had been a successful stockbroker, grown children, very successful. He was in a car crash. He woke up with bumps and bruises and was told he will never see again. He had to literally rethink his life. Now imagine a young Marine whose last memory was patrolling a hot and dusty village somewhere. He remembers an explosion, maybe some pain. He awakes in a hospital with tubes going in all sorts of places, and he can't see. And at some point he is told he will never see. No matter what other injuries he may have, his loss of sight is going to be, at least at first, the most devastating loss he has to deal with. Things he has taken for granted are no longer there. He is facing a long and a difficult path. Now, there are training centers, and there are therapy centers, and there's Denver and Louisiana and all sorts of other things, but you have to want to go there. You have to want to get on with your life. You have to rethink what's important and how you respond. And that is where your religion, your faith, your philosophy, whatever it is, becomes crucial. And it's a time in your life when you may not want other people around you. I've been in hospital work and I've heard it. Leave me alone! You don't understand what I'm going through! And that's where we can help. That's where we can step in. A vet in emotional pain may not want to talk to another person. And at that moment, a CD of a familiar prayer or a passage from the Psalms or someone who has been through it talking about how he got through it, that CD might be more valuable at that moment than six doctors, three counselors, and a partridge in a pear tree. To the point where that person wants training, then he will accept help. Then he can start to imagine a new life. But first he has to come to grips with himself and his injuries, and often enough, his God. So we are reaching out to vets. And how do we do that? By reaching out to veterans organizations to make sure they know about us. At the National Convention for Catholic War Veterans and the National Convention of the American Legion, resolutions were passed this past year calling on each of these organizations to put more emphasis on reaching out to and involving the blind veterans and visually impaired veterans. We wrote those resolutions and we made sure that they were presented and ultimately passed. We have similar resolutions for the veterans of foreign wars and other organizations. We continue to meet with a whole lot of groups. We have attended more luncheons and meetings than I can count. Later this year, we will be doing a mailing to every service officer and every American Legion post in the United States. We are working through the Military Vicariate of the Catholic Church, VA hospitals, the Fisher Foundation. We, the Xavier Society for the Blind, are members of the Wounded Warriors Foundation in Washington, and one of our staff sits on the 1812 Planning Commission. It's a whole list of other things we're doing I don't have time to name. It is important to reach out. I said it yesterday, and I'll say it again. If you have a wonderful program, that's terrific, and if nobody knows about it, you're wasting your time. We heard about it at the town hall yesterday. Counselors who don't know, agencies who don't know, struggling parents and individuals who can't find the information and the referrals and the resources they need. You can't blame the people who are searching. You can blame the agencies who have the resources for not being successful in getting the word out. And I don't mean that as a criticism of anybody. That applies to the Xavier Society for the Blind just as much as anybody else. But too often the emphasis is put just on the programming, with little attention and little energy toward letting other people know about it. But of course, reaching out to the blind community has its own challenges. Several months ago, I was at the national meeting of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. I went to present a volume of the new Braille translation of the Bible and to scold the bishops gently about the treatment of blind people in the Catholic Church. And one of the things I said to them was, in my experience, amazingly enough, I don't understand it, but you know, blind people are invisible. When I first got to the Xavier Society for the Blind, there was a mass for people with disabilities, and I called up, and they said, oh, yes, please come and can celebrate. So I went to St. Patrick's Cathedral, and they'd put up a ramp so the lady with the wheelchair who was doing the first reading could get to the pulpit. They had a deaf translator so that the deaf people could understand what was going on. They even had a deaf choir, God bless them, who were going to do a special solo hymn after communion. You know what's coming, right? Not a piece of Braille in the whole cathedral. There were people with dogs, there were people with white canes, and nobody thought of it. Never occurred to them that there might be blind people there. At the back of St. Patrick's, and I have teased Archbishop Dolan about this, they have a brochure that describes the cathedral. And it talks about the history and the architecture and the side altars and everything that's involved, and it's available in Korean and Swahili and all sorts of interesting languages. It is not available in Braille. I asked one of the docents at the cathedral about that, and you know what the answer was? Well, they don't need that. They can't see. And I said, I beg your pardon, they need it more than anybody else. Don't get me started. I was scolding a friend of mine who was a priest about the lack of Braille material in his parish, and he said, well, John, I don't have any blind people. I said, are you sure? He said, first of all, a lot of blind people function so efficiently, you may not know they're blind. Secondly, they may already have left, because you didn't give them the prayers or the words of the hymns or the readings, so they couldn't participate. They may have gone someplace where they feel welcome. And to his credit, he said, wow, I never thought of that. Send me some of your material, and I'll put it in the back of the church, and I'll even put up a sign saying that it's available. Well, you know, I caught him on that, and he felt very embarrassed, but it's true. Look, sighted people who aren't experienced with this don't think about it. When I was preparing for this convention, somebody sent me an email with attachments, and it was photos of a number of signs that have been put out with Braille underneath, right? One said, don't stare into the laser beam. Another, speak when the light flashes. Caution, hot glass. Yes, the sign was attached to the glass. So to read the Braille, yeah. Caution, this door opens outward. Do not stand directly in front of door. And my favorite, and this was a sign that was on a piece of sculpture, please do not touch. You know, with the best will in the world, they have to be exposed. They have to be taught. Blind people can be invisible. I still go out for walks periodically with my sleep shades and my white cane. I'm sure you've had the experience, because I have. I'm walking down the road, and a busy New Yorker bumps into me, and as he's going by, I can hear him saying, what's the matter, you blind? Well, yeah, I'm wearing sleep shades, and I'm carrying a big white cane. You think that's a clue? Look, we all know that for the most part, there are exceptions, but for the most part, the community of blind people are outgoing, friendly people, take care of one another. You want to know something, you ask somebody. Susan yesterday had a problem. She has more responses today than she can deal with. I belong to Blind Law, the online chat room where lawyers and people who are concerned with blind issues talk. Recently, a woman posted a notice about a sign that went up in her neighborhood. She had 20 responses, all intelligent, all focused. She assimilated them, went to see the right person. The next day, the sign was taken down. We all sometimes need help. If somebody is looking for the poster child of the poor, blind, helpless person who needs our assistance, don't look at the NFB. At least not the people that I have met over the years, and certainly none of the people in this room. We need help from time to time. And as I said yesterday, my brief experience as a blind person, a temporary blind person, and through the people that I have met, is that blind people can do pretty much anything sighted people can with training and tools. And that's not just a saying, I've lived it. And that's what we want to convey to those vets and others who seek our services, especially those in need of spiritual help. Now, I'm not assuming anybody here is going to sign up for our outreach program, and I'm certainly not here to take up a collection. If I did, Carl would kill me. And by the way, for those of you who are going to come to Mass tomorrow morning, there is no collection there either. Just so you know. But I am, now he's going to come, right? I am going to suggest two things. And one is, most of you in this room have the immediate and personal experience, not just of living blind, but being successful and active and participating as a person with less than perfect vision. you are in a unique position to talk to someone else who is just starting to grapple with this question. So I would ask you to keep yourself open to the opportunities to perhaps visit at a VA hospital, to meet with young men and women who may be the victims of bombs or chemicals or just bad luck. When a wounded vet strikes out with the familiar, "You don't know what I'm going through," having someone who is blind answer back can open the door to some serious conversation. And my second thought for today comes out of our conversations yesterday. And it is that perhaps we need to be as assertive in promoting what blind people are doing as we are in agitating for the need for change. To visit legislative offices and set up picket lines are effective means of influencing change. But so is making sure that more people have a better sense of what it is to be blind and what is already being done. That there are blind people who are working and creating and traveling and running businesses and performing in concerts and teaching and doing all sorts of things. Sometimes I hear people talking about someone they know who is blind, and it sounds rather like a trick pony. Imagine, he's totally blind and he can dress himself all by himself. Excellent. I'm only slightly exaggerating, you know. People need to get more used to seeing blind people doing things to the point where it is no longer extraordinary. Maybe we need a reality TV show set in one of our centers so they can follow people as they learn what's being done. It seems to me that we all, whether blind or sighted, need to work harder at spreading the message, the positive message of self-sufficiency. Local radio and TV stations are always looking for public interest stories and interviews. Local clubs and groups are always, always looking for guest speakers for luncheons and other events. And it doesn't have to be rocket science. Look, you could do a 20-minute talk on basic cane travel techniques that would have the audience riveted. People are fascinated on how you can get around with only a white stick and your mind. You will have questions that'll go for another 20 minutes. There is a famous line about not hiding your light under a basket. When I first joined the National Federation of the Blind, I started learning. And I keep learning, and I keep learning, and I keep learning. And of all the things I have learned, the most important is the only barriers we have are the ones we let stop us. And that is a message that needs to be reinforced and shared and trumpeted. Finally, yes, finally, Carl, I'm finishing. He was either pulling on my trousers leg or picking my pocket. I'm not sure which, but I was assigned by my provincial to work at the Xavier Society for the Blind. It was not my idea. Maybe it was God's idea, I don't know. But I am thankful every single day that I have been sent to this work because it is needed. What we do is needed and what we do is important. But mostly because I get to meet and work with people like you. So to be a part of this great work, I thank you. And God bless you, and God bless the National Federation of the Blind.
I don't know that it was your provincial's idea, Father, but it was certainly God's idea that you come to the Xavier Society. After all, you came to Earth on the day of the Feast of St. Lucy. And like you said, since you came today to Earth on the day of the Feast of St. Lucy, don't tell me God doesn't have a sense of humor too. Thanks again, Father. It's a pleasure doing business with you. Right. I was going to say Jane Summer. Sharon Phillips was going to be here today. We got a call a couple of days ago that Sharon has a pretty serious family problem and as a result cannot be here. However, is it Michael Whitney? Yes. It is. Michael Whitney is subbing for Sharon and he's going to do just as good a job as Sharon would have done. No pressure, Mike. Mike is from the New York State Talking Book and Braille Library, sometimes shorthand for that is the Upstate Library.
We did not invite the Downstate Library because they're in such transition right now downstate. Mark McCluskey, the former librarian, retired. The position was just filled, and it's hard. I feel guilty having somebody hit the ground and they have one of their first or second days on the job coming before us. So I want them to settle in, and that person, whoever he or she is, I don't even have the name yet, will be here next year. We certainly have had that commitment with the Downstate Library forever. But for whatever he cares to say, from the Upstate Library, let me give you Mike Whitney.
Hi, I'm Mike Whitney. Can you all hear me? Can you hear me? Okay, I'm new at this. I'm an automation librarian with the New York State Talking Book and Braille Library. And I was also assigned 2 years to the Talking Book and Braille Library. And I can't tell you how impressed I am every day with, you know, with the blind community. And it's just so great to serve you. It's just a pleasure. So let me explain what we do and what some of our services are. And if you have questions later on, I'd be glad to answer them or try to answer them. We serve the 55 upstate New York counties, New York State Talking Book and Braille Library, located in Albany. We're underneath where the museum is, and the seven downstate counties are served by the Andrew Heskel Library. And we serve about 38,000 people, and includes 1,600 schools, and the downstate library serves about 20,000 people. And registered borrowers can receive free of charge. We still have the old audio cassettes available. Of course, we're moving to the, you know, we're transitioning to the digital format. We have Braille books, and we have audio and Braille magazines and playback equipment. And we work with the NLS, which is based in Washington, and they provide the playback equipment to us, and then we distribute it to you. The state provides per capita support about $19 per reader to the state library to administer the program in all locations. And circulation has been actually leveling off for all Talking Book libraries in the past few years as other sources, like the previous speaker mentioned, have become available. In the past 6 months, TIBL, New York State Talking Book and Braille Library, We've circulated about 177,000 books in audio and Braille format. And we also have the BAR downloading system. And currently there's about 1,500 registered BARD users. The digital format started in November of 2009, and the transition is ongoing. And what we have digital cartridges that are based on industry standards, DAISY format. And due to copyright restrictions, those books play on our digital players that we distribute to you. And as of now, only all NLS books are only created in digital format. So while we still have the cassettes available, they're not being made anymore. They're really not being supported to very much. The BARD site has, right now, there's about 23,000 digital books available. And when you get your digital player, you have to apply to us for BARD. And I'm an automation librarian. I support the BARD system. And I work with the database. So I'm kind of the guy behind the curtain, makes everything work. So we administer BARD, and we register, we train. So if you have questions on BARD, you can call us at the library, and I step you through the process. The improvements in the digital format have made it more user-friendly, and we also now have institutional accounts. So the institutions like schools can get BARD, and the hope is that they're going to pass on that information to all their clients. And public libraries now can get demo accounts. Right now, NLS is only giving them access to about 5 books that they can download and explain to their library patrons how the system works. We have a magazine pilot now that magazines are going onto digital cartridges. That's quite not quite ready yet, but it's in the pipeline. We have a Tibble Facebook page that should go live within the next few weeks. If you do call us, if you can, give us your email address, because it's an easier way for us to send out a mass emails to, you know, keep you informed about new programs. We have an online catalog, so you can order your books online. And if you call us, we can give you your login and password to get onto that. We are, because of budget cuts, our Tibble public service point at the library is no longer available. So if you come into the library, you can just go to the circulation desk and ask them for a Talking Book and Braille Library staff person, and we'll come right up and serve you. So you can still come into the library, but it's we don't have that service point available anymore. Unfortunately, with staffing, we've lost about 10 people in the past 2 years. So we've gone from, right now we only have about 15 people working at the Talking Book and Braille Library. And about 3 years ago, we had 25. So that's quite a big cut. So we've become kind of jack of all trades. So, you know, we've learned to multitask and just kind of do what we can. Unfortunately, sometimes the digital cartridges will back up. Circulation just can't be as efficient when you go from 25 people to 15. So we do the best we can. If you call us, we serve you, but sometimes it's not as fast as we might have been able to do, you know, even 3 years ago or in the past. We've had to cut back on our phone hours. We have the people who used to be on the phone, we have them sometimes working in the back with circulation. If we don't do that, you know, people aren't going to get their books. We encourage the BARD program as much as we can. The problem with that is sometimes, we have older patrons who are not computer savvy. So we work with the families, with friends. You know, we work any way we can with people. People on BARD, they have trouble understanding how to work with their computer to download the books, uncompress them, and get them onto the digital player. Are any of you using the BARD system? Yeah. Okay. Great. Can I see the hands, please? Okay, so we have about 15,000 active patrons, and we have about 1,500 people now signed up for BARD. So that's about, 12%. So that means 88% people don't have BARD. So we have 23,000 titles now. You know, when NLS creates the books, they immediately go onto BARD. But if the 88% of the people in the library don't have BARD, what they utilize are the digital cartridges, and that is only, we have only about 5,000 of those, because the overhead of creating the digital cartridges is costly, and it's a slow process. So that means people have to wait for books. And what happens too is everyone wants, there's a tendency in public libraries like ours for people to want the most popular books. People, you know, we have a large inventory, but, you know, Nicholas Sparks or Daniel Steele, those types of things, and many others tend to be very popular. So we don't have those in stock, and people have to wait. But so if you can get on Bard, even if you have someone to help you, we have people who download for their family members, and we support, you know, if you have questions, you can always call and you talk to me, and I'm pretty good at stepping people through. Does anyone have any questions?
All right. You guys know the drill. Let's share this mic. Okay, you guys know the drill. I've heard several names. I want to use my own first. Mike, and I'm not sure that you can answer this, and if you can't, I'll respect that. You talked about being down a good 40% in staff a few minutes ago, from 25 down to 15, and that given the cuts, you've also been cutting your phone hours. Are those cuts due to a reduction in your budget, do you still have items that are unfilled and you don't have permission to hire? Do you have the money and not the permission, or do you not have the money even?
Both.
Both.
We don't have the money, and we don't fill position when positions. You know, it's New York State, so civil service. So when our positions leave us, we cannot hire a new person. So say we might have someone who's a grade six, and they, of course, they want to increase their salary. So the New York State system is very large, obviously. So what they'll do is, obtain a position in another department that's a grade nine, for example. When that happens, we lose that position. So that's one less person you have to work for you.
Okay, I think we know what to do about some of that. I'm not going to ask you for advice on that. That's not you. That's above you. We've been around this block a few times with other things. We can address that.
I've been involved with. Actually, I was a reassignment. I used to work in digitization as an automation librarian, and I was transferred to Talking Book and Braille Library. Their director transferred me down to Talking Book and Braille Library to work with the database, to work with the whole system. And it's a pleasure. I love it. It's a wonderful job. I love it.
We are told as citizens today that government is out of money, and I think I might believe part of that. But at the same time, the government is saying we're broke, we're out of money, go away, citizens, stop bothering us, we're your elected officials.
Right.
While they're busy saying that, other people are still standing there saying we want money for our need, and somebody's going to get some of that money, and the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and I guess we're going to squeak some. So I don't know how successful we'll be at this, but if we don't start asking, like everybody else in the state is asking, we're never going to get anything. So we're going to.
Yes, exactly, right.
I'm not sure of the strategy yet. We'll discuss some of that tomorrow.
Okay.
The strategy, but library hasn't heard the last from its supporters. This is not about the library. This is about somebody doing something to our library.
That's correct.
There are only two in New York State.
And that's correct.
And there's only one that serves the counties north of New York City. And this is the only library that we have. And
that's correct.
I guess if permission to speak freely, sir, I'll be damned if they're going to mess with our library.
Thank you.
Now, I had a couple of requests out there for the floor. With permission from you guys, I'm going to take questions from people who are served by this library first. We're getting up into the lunch hour. So if I hear your name and you live in the area served by the library, because I heard up and down state names. So I did hear Vinny. Vinny, go.
Wait.
Yeah, wait. Hold on. Yeah, Jim. Jim, you live in the Bronx. Jim, hold on. All right. Okay. Then I will. Okay. All right. Then, Jim, you're after Vinny. I ruled you out of my head because I know.
Yes,
you.
Mike. I got a very, very frustration for the last couple of months on trying to reach a representative from the library. Now you got the answer machine that comes on and says, press 1, press 2, press 3. If you want to speak to a representative on problems with the library or questions you want to ask, talk to the representative. I had a machine, one of the cassette braille machines that broke down, the first time in all the years I've had it. So the representative a few months ago said, wait, we'll send you a new one. Okay, that's good. I've been waiting about 3 weeks. They gave me a bunch of books that are on cassette tape. I ran out of digital. I'm trying to reach the library service to tell them, when is my tape going to come in, because I don't have any digital books. I could not reach anybody. You get number 3, and it says leave your telephone number.
Vinny.
And I leave my number. Nobody returns a call.
Okay, Vinny, give Mike a chance to respond to you, okay? Hold on 1 second.
What we do is we collect the phone calls, and I apologize that you weren't called back, and you should be called back. Now, can you use email? Okay, that's another option. If you know, those get answered also. But I don't know why you weren't called back. Maybe I have no idea. And you have an old machine? You need a new machine? You got it, okay. Right, and you have a, yeah.
Other questions? I got Venerbo, and did I hear Webb? No, I didn't, okay. Venerbo. Anybody have,
right here.
I'm gonna take Venerbo and no more.
Okay, fine. First of all, I'd like to say that I've had a very good experience with the Albany Library. They're great. And the people are very, very receptive. I have no problem. The only complaint I have is a dumb complaint. Sometimes they send me in a series of books from the same author, the sequel before the prequel. And that
What happens?
And that drives me up a wall, so I wish they would correct that.
That's an ongoing.
Okay?
What happens?
Other than that, they're great. Thank you.
That's often, we get the books from NLS, and we get the books as NLS produces them in Washington, you know, the Library of Congress. So they don't always create them in order. And that's, those are logistical issues from NLS. Above my pay. So what we do is when we get our books in and we process them, we put them right out. So we won't wait for the whole series to be completed. Even if there's holes in the series, we'll still. Thank you.